the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina, it's Civitalk with your hosts, Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax. But buckle up and let's wade into the deep end. What's really happening in your old North State?
Welcome to another edition of Civitalk. Today we have guest co-host here, Leah Byers. I feel like, Leah, you should be promoted to like permanent guest host at least, because you've been on a few times recently. Today we are going to look at the royal story, what some people are calling Mexit, with Princess, what's her name?
Meghan Markle
and Harry deciding to take a step back from the royal family. We're just going to discuss just a little bit of that because it's so heavy in the news. And we'll also look at Iran, some of the cultural meltdowns you have in the United States, and some of the meltdowns with some actual college students who think they're going to get drafted into World War III. North Carolina voter ID, an important topic here at Civitas we've been covering throughout, as our elections analyst Andy Jackson has done an excellent job just covering the day-to-day minutiae of that story. And then a possible new session, things that are going to occur here in the legislative chambers in North Carolina. So, Leah, how's it going today?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be back. Maybe I can be like an alternate host if we're going to promote me somehow. I like that title.
Yeah, that's a good title. Now, let me get your take on this. So you're a little bit younger than I am. You have this story of Harry and Meghan Markle, Prince Harry, and I guess the Duchess of Sussex is her title. They're taking a step back from the royal family. They put out a statement. I'll just read it because it's pretty short. This is what they put out. I think it was yesterday. We're taping on a Thursday. After many months of reflection and internal discussions, we have chosen to make a transition this year and starting to carve out a progressive new role within this institution. The statement said, we intend to take a step back as senior members of the royal family and work to become financially independent while continuing to fully support Her Majesty the Queen.
Yeah, so I think that's interesting that it makes it seem like they've had these internal discussions, you assume, with the monarchy, and then it comes out that the palace was blindsided by this. They haven't spoken with the Queen or Prince Charles or even Prince William and Kate apparently were blindsided by this. And the palace put out a statement as well, kind of in response, saying, we understand that they want a new role, but these are complicated issues and we're in the early stages of figuring out what this looks like.
Let me just say, I'm glad, first of all, because I don't really cover the royal stuff and I'm not criticizing people that do. It's just something else to read, and I've got my own quirks and things that I like in the news. But I'm glad to be an American. I'm glad that we won the Revolutionary War and we don't have to worry about the monarchy stuff. But I do think this is an important and interesting story because there's been several people, Piers Morgan, who's well known in America, British news analyst or commentator and like talk show host. He had a good story and I think it was in the Daily Mail on this whole, and there was another one I read, I think it was called the Millennial Wallace Simpson or something, and it had the point of just this whole notion of and not just criticizing millennials, because I think it's a problem. It's a global phenomenon, and especially a problem in the West, where young people are kind of rebelling against traditional norms or establishments, and it's all about finding yourself without a higher sense of duty. That was a point some of these commentators were making. So I do think it's an important story to some degree. So just interesting to me. I'm kind of concerned. I don't know what your feelings are this on Leah, but if she's going to come to North America, some people think Canada, but I'm sure that she's going to be entrenched in that Hollywood scene, both of them really. And if she's going to be lecturing us with her like continued wokeness, because she always speaks out on climate change and other sort of feminist topics and other topics that, you know, I think people just don't like to be lectured to. And probably the UK is more left-leaning in America for sure, but they were even getting sick of being lectured to.
Yeah, I've wondered when I first saw it if this had to do with them wanting to be a little bit more political than they're currently able to be. That was my first thought, especially in the statement it says, we're going to be taking a more progressive role. What does that mean? They say they're establishing this new charity. Do they want to use that to do more political things?
Mm-hmm, I think so.
So yeah, that's my thought. There is also that kind of famous documentary that Meghan Markle was in where she's being interviewed and the interviewer asks her if she's doing okay. And she says, thank you for asking that. No one really asked that. You know, I'm not doing okay. I'm struggling with, you know, motherhood and being a newlywed and being in the spotlight. So it's probably some combination of both of those factors. But I think it's fair to say that, you know, Meghan Markle probably does have a different vision of what she would like to use her platform to do. But entering into life as a royal kind of put a damper on that, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is usually somewhere in the middle. And I agree with, certainly I think the British people, some of them, they're very, very upset because I guess they spent like £2.4 million to renovate the Frogmore Estate, which was gifted to them by the Queen. So, you know, there's people upset. And I guess they spent like £3 million or something on the wedding. So you had all these taxpayer-funded dollars that went to fund their lifestyle, and of course they get security and all those things, and that's understood there. And the people that argue for that in Britain, saying, you know, giving them all this money is that the royal family brings in so much money in tourism. Maybe so. Anyways, it's just an interesting story because I do think the truth is in the middle. I do think the British tabloids were unfair to her to some degree, but she brought some of it on herself, no doubt. And it's just interesting to me. It just this sort of step away. I do think she wants to be a little bit more entrenched in maybe the Hollywood lifestyle and sort of just kind of take on that wokeness role of lecturing Americans and Canadians and wherever she is at wherever point in her life. And it's kind of grating to me to some degree.
Yeah. And I had read that they actually are going to continue to live in the cottage that is owned by the Queen and that they recently renovated. And that only about 5% of their funding currently comes from the sovereign grant, which is the taxpayer money, and 95% comes from Prince Charles and his Duchy of Cornwall. Is that
what it is? I think that's right.
And so I don't know how they generate their revenue, if that's also local taxes, or I'm not sure. I don't really know much about the system. But regardless, the 5% of the from the national sovereign grant is what they're cutting ties with. So to me, it seems like they're really they're kind of having their cake and eating it too. They're keeping a lot of their royal lifestyle, but they want to be able to earn money, earn income, which they're prohibited from doing right now. And then also they want to have the flexibility perhaps to spend more of their time, as you said, a lot of people think in Canada, but they just said broadly North America.
Yeah, I don't think like Prince Harry is going to be going to work at like Costco or anything. I mean, I think raising money to them is just going to be like showing up for charity events and just sort of being professional woke actor and actress. So, yeah, any final thoughts on this? I do think it's an interesting story because I just want to pivot back to this point. I do see some in the media in Britain, particularly writing how this is kind of a selfish you know, sense of calling or a selfish decision, and that it takes this whole role of Harry away from the royal family to some degree. I know he's going to, they're talking about sending 6 months over there and 6 months in North America, but it's basically in a sense severing ties to some degree. And so I think it's important because it does get to this point of like, are they abandoning their sort of duty that they were given and maybe don't aren't connected to a higher calling and kind of just want to live this more lavish and selfish lifestyle, which some people would argue the royals already do to some degree. But I do find that aspect interesting within the story.
Yeah, I wonder if they kind of shot themselves in the foot a little bit if they are trying to get out of the media spotlight more, because now in this unprecedented role, you know, I saw someone point out that media is going to be scrutinizing them even more to see what they're going to do and what how they're going to carve this space out. And the reality is that with the birth of William's three children, Harry's so far down on the line of succession now that eventually the two of them probably would have faded from public view, maybe less so because of Meghan's status as a high-profile American kind of makes them unique. But, you know, if they would have just kind of grown old and raised their child and as more focus shifted to the next generation, I think they could have slipped back from the limelight some anyway, but now that they're creating this new path, I think they may have kind of been.
Oh, I completely agree with you. I think that they will probably crash a lot of American parties and be big over here, celebrities. So I think you'll see, if this goes the way that they're saying, I think you're going to see some of that. And it's just interesting to see what, you know, people obviously change when they get married. I've changed. And Harry was just sort of this happy-go-lucky sort of, you know, he was kind of known a little bit as a playboy and to some degree, and now he's kind of taken on this persona of Megan too, where he kind of lectures the public, which I find a little bit annoying. But anyways, let's shift to Iran. We're not going to talk about the geopolitical crisis so much as, you know, some of these college kids have been melting down on Twitter. I saw a story, I didn't really look into it too deeply, but of a few students like ripping up their FAFSA forms or not signing their federal student aid, because they're in the small print down there. It talks about if you're a male student, the draft, that you were eligible for selective service. Now, I guess these people don't know that includes voting, and there's other aspects. It's not just the FAFSA form or taking that money. But it's just kind of interesting to see sort of this freak out with people with the news that's been going on in Iran with the strikes. You had military strikes from Iran. You had Trump, who killed the military leader. His name escapes me at the moment. And then, of course, just more recently, the Ukrainian plane that was supposed to land in Tehran that was shot down by, it looks like, Iran, according to the U.S. media.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that this particular military happening blew up in the way that it did, and especially on the internet and with maybe millennials or even Gen Z. Individuals with the amount of like memes and social media shares that were coming about World War III, whereas we've been in the Middle East for,
yeah,
you know, over a right. decade, like I guess coming up on 2 decades or even longer,
yeah,
than that,
two decades, but, really,
yeah, above if you go back to other conflicts, right. This is the most modern one. So yeah, I think it is interesting. I actually saw in the news that there were scammers that were taking advantage of the hysteria and sending out these fraudulent text messages saying, we know this account is valid, we know this number is valid, you're being drafted, you need to report
that's pretty funny
to your local place, and you have to reply to this text message, and if you don't, you can face 6 years in prison. So like getting people to reply to them.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, I hadn't seen that.
The Army had to like issue a news release saying like, this is not real, we're yeah. voluntary service, you know.
Well, here's the thing, Leah, I mean, we'd have to be in a highly unusual situation to use the draft again. We haven't had a draft since the Vietnam era, since the 1970s, early 70s. And here's the thing with that is we'd have to be in a really big global conflict, which, you know, could be possible. But the military has said consistently over the last few decades, and I know things can always change, but they don't want draftees. They don't want people who don't want to be in the military. In fact, the Air Force is hard to get into, and some of these services are hard to get into nowadays. And they don't want kind of like the fat computer keyboard warrior sitting at home. You know, I'm included in this. I include myself in this, so I'm not criticizing all those folks. But they just don't want those people. They want an all-volunteer service. That could certainly change at some point in the future. Mm-hmm. Hope it doesn't, because I think it's a good idea that you have a professional and all-volunteer service. But, you know, just kind of my thinking on that is the hysteria was just so unwarranted and so, I think, just kind of showed the uninformed nature of some of these students and people out there.
Yeah, the news report from the Army did say that if the draft were to be reinstated, it would take an act of Congress and the president signing off on it. So we would know about it well in advance. But I think that's a good point to say that them being a volunteer military does probably make them better. And especially, so my mom actually works with veterans after they come back from service, and she helps them get their benefits and whatnot. And so just to see like the PTSD that these men and women suffer from, and even just the effect that it has on their life and their social lives and their emotional state outside of that, I think it's a good thing that we're not forcing people into this in the way, which some of those, you know, older men and women, maybe they were drafted. I don't know all of their circumstances, but yeah, I think with the amount, the kind of mental state that you have to be in, and what it puts you through, what service puts you through mentally and emotionally, it's a good thing that we don't have the draft. And I think that just reemphasizes the importance of thanking our veterans and their families and our military service members and for the work that they do and the sacrifices that they make.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. And one of the things that I noticed with this whole story is like you had the media too. Some folks, MSNBC was one. I'm not going to call out all the media, but there were some media outlets that were irresponsible. They were using Iranian news sources to report on American casualties. MSNBC, I think, put something out on Twitter that said 80 Americans had died in the strike. And the retaliatory strikes that Iran tried to hit American service men and women in Iraq. And so, you know, it's just kind of another example of, I think, shoddy reporting by some in the media because of their hatred for Donald Trump. Whatever you think about Donald Trump, I still think you should try to get the facts right when in your reporting. So to me, that was disappointing to see. I don't know, Leah, if you saw Donald Trump's comments. I guess they were this yesterday at 11:30 or 11 a.m. Just the way that the doors swung open and stuff, it was very Trumpian to me. I don't know if you saw that.
I saw parts of the remarks. I didn't see it all.
So we probably won't discuss Iran too much. I think it's something, the one thing that was also interesting to me is you had criticism, rightfully so, of the White House and President Trump from Rand Paul and Mike Lee. They're senators from Kentucky, and Mike Lee's from Utah. They said that the briefing that they got was very subpar, were very upset about the White House. And I think that's important because I think it's important overall, even though we have a lot of abuse of power in Congress, but it's important for Congress to flex its muscle, I think, when it comes to any sort of War Powers Act or just military declarations or military incursions. I do think it's important per our Constitution for the Congress to be more involved and not necessarily just be a White House endeavor. I know traditionally, at least in recent history, it's more been that way, but I do think it's important for Congress to flex more of its muscle in terms of the Constitution and take a little bit more of an active role when there are incursions or military commitments abroad.
Yeah, I do think that that's fair, and we want to obviously abide by the Constitution as much as possible. I can see the benefit of, especially in today's divisive political culture with Congress, the benefit of not having you know, too many cooks in the kitchen, if you will, and especially in those kind of situations where you have to make decisions very quickly. And that just emphasizes the importance of elections, right? Like, who is the president matters a lot in these kind of situations, whereas with other things, you know, Congress can matter more as they're making the legislation for domestic issues, but for international affairs, it just emphasizes the importance of putting the right man or woman in the White House.
Okay, let's shift to North Carolina. The big story right now, and it's going to continue to be a big story, I think, but it bothers me because the will of the voters was overturned with this voter ID. Loretta Biggs is the district judge, middle district of North Carolina, federal judge appointed by Barack Obama. I'm looking for a quote here. But she struck down the voter ID law, at least temporarily, until the NAACP, from my understanding, until the NAACP's lawsuit, which is technically against Cooper, can be heard, even though Cooper vetoed the bill. But she said that North Carolina has a sordid history of racial discrimination and voter suppression. Well, I think that's true, at least to some degree. We all know that. I mean, the old Confederacy states all have problems, you know, from Reconstruction onward and even before that, but particularly in terms of the voting history. We'll look at that. There certainly have been problems in terms of disenfranchising certain minorities, right, certain voter suppression. There's no doubt about that. But to me, it's like, what makes you North Carolina so unique from a suppression and discrimination standpoint when states like Mississippi have no problems with voter ID? I think South Carolina now has a strict voter ID law. Virginia, an old state of the Confederacy, has a strict voter ID law. Tennessee, and then the other states in the South, they all have a voter ID law. So to me, this is unique. Clearly, I think this will be overturned. But it's just kind of interesting that you saw that level of judicial activism. I don't know what kind of thoughts you have on that, Leah.
Yeah, I think that reading, you know, Andy Jackson is our elections policy analyst, and he has a great piece up on our website right now called Voter ID Will Be Reinstated in Time for the General Election. It's definitely worth a read because he kind of explains how her logic in the indictment is so twisted. She basically says, you passed a voter ID law in the past and it was ruled unconstitutional because of discriminatory intent. So because the same legislators are still in power, this new law is also discriminatory. And that kind of logic, if you just follow it through, is like every law that they've passed while these same people are still in office, discriminatory. And some people on the left may say yes. They may say this is a racist group of legislators. I don't see that. I can't speak for each individual person, but I think when it comes to this law and discriminatory intent, that's just a little bit of a stretch. And then another thing, as you said, is voter ID actually was passed by the people in North Carolina.
Yeah, 55.6%, I think.
Yeah, and so do the people of North Carolina have discriminatory intent, or do they care about the security of their elections? I think I know which one I believe it to be. And another thing to note, too, is that she actually struck down the bill that implements voter ID. So this isn't dealing with the constitutional amendment itself, but with the bill that implements it. And that bill was so kind of watered down.
It was a joke almost.
To make everyone happy, that the fact that she struck it down, as you said, compared to other states, is laughable. And it was so watered down to the point where Andy, our elections analyst, actually opposed the bill because it really was just too weak.
Yeah, and Andy's a pretty level guy, so if Andy's opposing it, you know, it's weak sauce. So, I mean, it's just, to me, the judicial activism really bothers me. It seems to be particularly bad in North Carolina. I know it has to, we're the Fourth Circuit here, and is it the Fourth Circuit? I keep always getting mixed up. I can't remember if it's third or fourth. Anyways, but also, I mean, with our state Supreme Court, which leans heavily left, obviously, it just seems to be particularly bad in North Carolina. I mean, you can go back the tax amendment, you know, all these things that have been struck down at some point, it's gotten ridiculous. I mean, you can go back to the marriage amendment, you know, over a decade ago, I guess, or around a decade ago. I don't remember exactly what year that was now.
2012.
Okay, so almost a decade ago. So just over and over again, I mean, the will of the voters, and I understand, look, I understand there's a separation of powers for a reason. The courts are there for a reason, to be a safeguard of constitutional law, whether it be federal or state. I understand all that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, at some point, you're eroding the power of the legislature to represent the people and to do their job under the Constitution. And it's just becoming horrendous in North Carolina. And I think an important, as a sidestep, Attorney General Josh Stein is going to defend, he said, the voter ID law. He's going to wait till after the primary, I guess as a compromise, because he doesn't really support it. But he's going to wait till the primary is over and then defend it, he has said. But I think those on the right, conservatives, Republicans in the state, really need to invest harder, and I think in the attorney general election, maybe in coming, I think that's an important that sometimes gets overlooked. And part of that is maybe because Josh Stein's still very popular. He kind of comes across, even though it's not true, as more of a moderating figure. He's successful at Cooper in some ways like that. But I do think that it's a position that the right needs to focus on more in North Carolina going forward.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And this decision does put Stein in an interesting position because he's going to have to defend voter ID, which his base will not be in support of, but it's his job to do that in this capacity. But I think that Stein and Cooper are different politically in my mind because Cooper was able to stay. He was attorney general for 16 years, but he was pretty under the radar for most of that time leading up into his ascension to the governor's mansion. And so I think that Stein, just coming from the legislature, this is his first term as attorney general, and he was very left-leaning in the legislature. And so I think he kind of has that reputation that he's going to have to shake off if he wants to win a more high-profile statewide office like the governor in the future.
Yeah, Cooper was so low-key. He only sent like two emails or something as governor. I mean, as attorney general. So yeah, it'll be interesting to watch. Obviously, I think this will be overturned because, look, I mean, all these other southern states that have this similar history to North Carolina, some of them much worse than North Carolina, at least from a suppression standpoint, have voter ID. It's no longer controversial. They've gotten clearance from the Justice Department. They've gotten clearance from the Justice Department, not under Trump, but under Eric Holder. In the Obama administration. So, you know, to me, to continually play the race card on voter ID is just kind of sad. It's sad to see the NAACP, which has done so many good things in history, not just in North Carolina, but across this nation, has just kind of spiraled into this sort of sad, tyrannical partisan organization in many respects. So we'll continue obviously to follow that, and you can always go to nccivitas.org to read Andy's pieces. But let's conclude, Leah, with talking about what could happen in this upcoming session. When does it start? I don't even know that. I know it's soon, but why don't you fill in our listeners when the upcoming session is going to start?
So it starts on January 14th, which is this coming Tuesday, and I thought originally they were going to do things related to maybe some redistricting with the lawsuits and stuff, but my understanding is they've gotten that settled. So now they're coming back in to make some changes to comply with some federal laws dealing with taxes. That should be, I think, non-controversial. And then the more controversial, I guess, potential issue is the override of the governor's veto of the state budget. So the House overrode the veto, and now it's to the Senate, where they only need one Democrat to vote with Republicans in order to override Cooper's veto. And the reason that things are different now versus when they were in session in the fall is because the filing for the 2020 elections has closed for the state legislature, and for all offices, it closed in December. And so if a Democrat strays and goes against the governor, then the party can't put up a primary challenger. So if they want to get that person out of office, they'll have to give the seat to a Republican, which they don't want to do. And so the governor has lost a lot of his leverage over the Democrats to kind of keep them in line.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And it'll be interesting to see what happens. My gut tells me is they're not going to be able to override the veto, because I think there's so much pressure on the Democrats to give Cooper this issue, because I still think, whether we don't know for sure if it's going to harm him or help him, but I do think Cooper wants to run on the teacher issue, and this will take some of that away from him. Not all of it. I mean, he'll continue to run on just more education spending, higher pay, sometimes the utopian higher pay that's unreachable is a big part of Cooper's message. But I think he really wants to run as, you know, Republicans are the bogeyman on this issue. And so that will be a big part of his reelection campaign, of course, and having teachers mobilized and teachers all fired up, and just having some of the public a liberal education establishment in the state just all fired up and worked up. So any final thoughts? I mean, do you have any final thoughts before we close out today?
I did forget another thing they're going to consider in the short session, or this coming special session, is a bill to provide funding for scholarships for children of military veterans. And that was, I think, a funding hole because of the budget stalemate. And so they're going to kind of do one of their mini budgets to fill that gap.
Yeah, so they'll get a workaround on that. Obviously, it made a lot of headlines about a month ago, maybe a little over a month ago.
Right.
So, Leah, thanks for joining us today. We had a great... I know Brooke probably missed out, because she would have loved to talk about the royal controversy. I mean, she loves that kind of stuff.
Right.
But I don't follow... I didn't know that much about Meghan Markle. I don't really follow the story. I know actually more about the history with Wallace Simpson when she took, I think it was Edward VIII, and that was Elizabeth's uncle. I know a little bit more about the history than I know contemporary current stuff. But I do find it a little bit, this is the one time I've kind of paid attention to, because I do think it kind of shows a shift, at least in sort of the narrative that has gone on there. And maybe, you know, I'll admit if someone wants to call me out, I think I'm unfair, but it does show Meghan has sort of... gone in there, and I won't use the word tainted, but I think she's gone in there and kind of maybe didn't understand all she was getting into, and just kind of wants to do what she wants to do. And,
yeah, that's fair. As an American from California, she's bound to have a different perspective, and
right.
Obviously those two just weren't meshing.
No, and it's interesting because you hear all this stuff about her William and Harry being torn apart, but it's just kind of fascinating a little bit. And, you know, I've never been one of those people that sort of just criticizes those two boys willy-nilly, because I think it was horrible what happened to their mom, mm-hmm. For whatever faults or great things. She had great qualities, but she had some faults as well. But the way that her life ended was just totally unfair. I remember being in, I guess I was in college, or maybe I was just before college. I don't remember exactly when she died, but it was in the 90s. And I just remember kind of being glued to the TV that night because what happened, that collision in the tunnel, and I guess it was near Paris.
Yeah, tragedy.
Yeah. Anyways, hopefully we'll have some great news. We've got a lot of work going on at Civitas, so check out all our content at nccivitas.org. We got some great profiles of some of the hot elections going on across the state up on our website right now. So thanks again, and thanks, Leah, for sitting in for Brooke. Really appreciate it.
Yeah.